Welcome to Day Zero Update for April 12th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew for this week, but we have plenty of news to talk about.
Yes, we do.
We had the Triple I Initiative Showcase that happened.
Yep.
With a bunch of interesting stuff in there, as well as a bunch of other news that happened.
Yep.
We got some interesting bad news here. A trio that we typically don't see getting mentioned together.
Yeah.
But we also have a bunch of other stuff coming out, especially in the near future, and say one of Nintendo's big summer games. So we'll get to that. And yeah, we'll talk about what we've been playing first. And yeah, I've been playing some more Temtem Swarm. I think at this point, the biggest knock I have against it, it's real hard to figure out how to unlock things, despite them having a big list of like things to do. I don't think it necessarily mentions what you get out of it. And like at this point, I am still unlocking the abilities for each of the Tems I've got. And the thing is that let's say there's the abilities, the techniques they call them, are the main offensive abilities, and then there's the gears, which are the passive abilities. And you know, much like in Vampire Survivors and all that, you have one passive ability that's needed to evolve the second into, you know, an evolved form. Here that's the case, but you don't always, since Vampire Survivors largely has everything you need to line up with the others from the start, and you just get some additional ones as you unlock more characters.
Right.
Here, the stuff you have unlocked from default does not necessarily have the ability to evolve. You have to get the sometimes you have to unlock the gears first, which figuring out like what needs to unlock, like I've been pulling up guides and wikis and such first, because sometimes they are very obtuse on the ways that you unlock some of that stuff. Sometimes it's been like, oh, just cause this much damage with you know, electric type techniques to unlock the gears that you need to do that, and it's like, okay, that's a whole run you have to do just for that kind of thing. And it's a lot of stuff like that. Luckily, there's a pretty decent wiki for the game. But it is kind of one of those things where you're working through a lot here. It is, since it's Pokemon style, I think there's 7 or 8 different elements of techniques and gears and all that. So then there's like at least like 4 or 5 for each element to unlock. And then there's the gears are not elemental in any way, but you may have some that are unlocked from the beginning and you just don't know what they go to. They do have a screen when you get the level up and like pick a, you know, something to add or something to improve, level up. There's a, like you hit R3 and that can pull up a thing that shows you like, here's all the evolutions that you can do, and it'll show you the ones you've already done. It's not as handy as the Vampire Survivors one where it just shows you a list of everything. It just may be you just don't know what the gear you need is. That kind of stuff. And yeah, it's just trying to find the right thing here. But I've had the right thing just looking at guides and still not had the evolution happen, which is a little frustrating because I feel like Vampire Survivors has it right where if you have it in the right state to evolve, the next time you get the chest, it evolves it generally. Here it has to be in that level up screen. You pick it up, pick it from there. So sometimes I guess it just doesn't show up for some of these. So I get some good runs where I get, you know, 2 or 3 of those evolutions involved, and that's nice. And sometimes it's like I can barely get one, it feels like. And sometimes it's a matter of having a good varied build, essentially, of these abilities. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of my runs, I just got all the water ones, and it's like, yeah, these are all pretty good, but maybe having all of them be, you know, one elemental and not necessarily having much variety between them is not the greatest way to go about things.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of stuff. Where I'm at, I'm still getting through a bunch of that. And you still have to level up the, or fill out the skill tree.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there's the concept, I think, of prestiging a character, a Temtem.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires filling out every thing on the skill tree, which takes a while. They do have ways of improving your numbers, and not just from, I think one of the gears is improving the amount of, I think the currency is called Pan Sun, how much of that you earn at a time. Similar for, you know, XP and all that kind of stuff. So the other way they do that is if you beat a stage and beat the final boss, you unlock the ability to quote unquote hack it, which is the ability to kind of like in Vampire Survivors where you have the ability to kind of do the turbo stuff where it just runs the stage at a faster pace.
Yeah.
But you also have the cards that can give you extra things to do or things to unlock, ways to make it a little more challenging, that kind of stuff. They have that here, but it is just a list of things, and they don't let you turn on everything, at least not right away. If you get a meter, and I don't know how big the meter is, it could be like 15 pips on it, but they limit you to 3 initially. And so you kind of go through, and I'm like, okay, what are the easiest things I can put on here? And there's like, honestly, quite a lot of them. For that, it is pretty well done for all of that. You know, you can have a thing that doubles the speed so that you get, you know, through a match in 10 minutes instead of 20. And that's like 2 pips. And there's a bunch of others that do various things, makes the enemies, you know, more powerful and all that. Like the one I typically turned on was one that just increased the amount of enemies that you would have show up that would be shielded. So they end up requiring a little extra damage before you can do actual damage to them. And so it's like that kind of stuff that you gotta deal with. So it's, yeah, 3 at first, and I think you have to beat the stage with that. And for those 3 pips, you get 1.3 times the Pan Sun out of that stage. So, and I assume it keeps going until, you know, you are at the max and probably get like 2.5 or whatever that would be. So yeah, that's a thing that's pretty nice when you do beat the boss. I've had like once, I think, where I almost either died and still killed it and it gave me it. I was like, all right, that's real nice. Games are more often like, just be like, well, you died, so who cares what else you did?
Yeah.
Just like, well, you should have done better. So yeah, this one's a little nicer on some of that stuff. But yeah, that's been kind of what I've been working on with Temtem Swarm, is unlocking new Tems and trying to fill out their skill trees as much as possible, though. Also dealing with the, at least the nice thing is when you unlock one, it gives you a ton of Pan Sun to fill out the skill tree. So you get less of the, well, now I've, you know, upgraded everything to about the same middling amount. It's a, the amount they give you is exclusive to that character. So anything you're spending on that character skill tree is coming from that reserve versus the general one you get from beating stages or failing stages or whatever you're doing. So it's like a nice way to kind of have it feel less like you are improving characters very slowly. So it's still slow because you got a bunch of things to do, and even a bunch of the spots on there are limited by, or they're locked until you do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So like keeping track of all this stuff to unlock can be daunting. They do, at least unlike most of the other games in this genre, they do let you see a list of the stuff, the unlock missions. So you can be like, all right, what am I working on? What am I close to? And maybe try and put some work into that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at least nice. I kind of wish you could just pin it on the screen instead of having to pause the game, but it's at least making improvements on things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice. Let me see. I've been playing some more Power Wash Simulator 2 because they got the new Adventure Time DLC. That is pretty nice. So yeah, I've not seen a ton of Adventure Time. I think I was watching some and I was up to like episode 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. So not really too far into it, but just enough to kind of get the vibes of the world.
Mm.
Which I would say is mostly kind of a slice of life kind of thing, I would say.
Yeah.
Where it's just like Ben and Jake kind of wake up and are like, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And usually something happens to give them something to do. So some of these episodes are just like, we still have nothing to do, so we'll find something. So the thing here is that you are playing this, what do they call it? The Kingdom Candy Cleaner kind of thing.
Yeah.
You're sort of something created by the princess. And sort of initially the first job is in the treehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we created this test to make sure that you are able to do the work. So like you get texts from Finn and Jake. They're like, yeah, we just emptied out our cupboard and made a huge mess all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, later on, they actually, we're hungry. We don't have any food.
Mm-hmm.
They ruined all their food for no reason. And so, yeah, it's got a really great look to it. They do a good job with the dirt because it's not just like the dirt you get in the main game.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much animated in kind of the style of Adventure Time.
Mm.
And so it kind of looks like a cartoonish look and texture of dirt of various kinds. So it looks really nice when it's in the stage. And at times I didn't even notice dirt was dirt because it just looked like, you know, like on the treehouse, like the floorboards just looked like they were just a dark color.
Yeah.
Almost. And I watched them. I was like, oh, this is okay. This is dirt. Okay. Started from there. After that, you do Pizza Sassy's, the pizza joint that mysteriously has all this weird ice style dirt all over it.
Mm.
You do that and the two businesses on the side, each side of it. So you get a little bit of extra space there to explore. And this is where you see that the scissor lift is Jake. Jake has taken that form. It even kind of has a decent bit of animation to it. You see his like face on the front of it. That kind of moves a little bit, and his butt on the back also moves a little bit. So that's pretty nice. And so, yeah, there's that. The third one is set in the Ice King's castle because he has had somehow somebody made a big pizza mess all over his place.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of going in, and sort of by the end, he figures out who's the person that actually caused this mess. And you kind of find his drum kit in there, which makes drum noises as you splash each part of it with water.
Yeah.
You kind of get a little bit of music going there. Also has like a penguin thing, I guess called Gunter, which I didn't know what that is because I don't think I've gotten that far in the show yet.
Oh, Gunter? Gunter is the Ice King's pet penguin.
Yeah. It just has eyes like Jake, so I was like, is this some other form Jake is taking?
No, but he is just about as terrifying.
Yeah. So I picked it up and put it on a windowsill after I cleaned it off.
Mm-hmm.
But That thing makes some noises every so often. BMO was in the treehouse, and every time it got splashed with water, it made Game Boy style noises, which was real annoying when it's sitting on a table where I got a bunch of cleaning to do, and I'm just constantly hearing loud Game Boy noises being viewed into my ears. I was like, you know what, this needs a cool down. Maybe like every 30 seconds, not every time water hits it because it's sitting on top of a table and chair, next to chairs and a wall and all this that I'm trying to clean. That was maybe the one knock I have, but I got those three stages done. I got two more to go, and so far none of these have been too all that big. Because, yeah, like the treehouse, you're just doing the bottom floor. Of it. I see there's a top floor that I assume is where their beds are at or something. So that's where that is. The three houses, like the three buildings that you do at on the Pizza Sassy's job, are pretty simple. It's like one side of the house or side of each of the buildings and a little bit on one of the sides and maybe a little on rooftop kind of areas, but not really too complicated there. The Ice King's domain is kind of the dirtiest of them all. You also got the jail cell and his bed and all this, and you find his diary and a little comic book he made about Fiona. And what's her face? I forget the other one.
Cake.
Cake, yeah. He has his own, like, weird comic book thing, and he texts you and it's like, oh, do you see this? Let me know how you like it. Kind of thing. It's like, all right, sure. Doing his own fan fiction, I guess.
Yeah, and then it ended up spinning off into its own thing.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I've played of that so far. Been enjoying it, so I'm gonna get the other two done. I don't think they're gonna take too long. One of them is a couple of vehicles. That's about all I remember. I don't know what the last one is. I think it's supposed to also be in the treehouse, so it might be the outside of the treehouse. But yeah, that's available now. $7.99 for it. 10 new trophies or achievements. Like all the DLC for the first game. It's one for completing each of the stages and one for doing a specific thing on them. So yeah, that's a fun. Then I've also been playing a game called The Survivalists. I got a code for the new DLC that they put out for this. I think it's like an ice area, but I've not gotten to it yet because I had not played the game itself yet. But this comes from the developer that has made a couple other games like this that is prison-based. You're essentially breaking out of a prison. And it's kind of a survival top-down kind of management kind of game, essentially. Those prison games, you're kind of managing your resources to try to break out of prison, and you kind of did that a few more times for the jobs they had for that stuff. Worked pretty well, but I think the major issue I had with the original game was that the you had to look up too much stuff. Like, they didn't want to tell you, like, clearly tell you, like, what you need to do, what things are, what you're looking for, all that kind of stuff. The Escapist is what that was called. It was 1 and 2. I played 1, did not play 2, but this is their new one, which is essentially you getting stranded on, you know, a tropical island. And sort of in the process, I feel like it's almost like their previous games meets, like, what am I thinking of? Don't Starve. A little bit of that to it. You land on this island and sort of immediately are, you know, tutorialized to collecting resources, and you can, I think there's like 3 or 4 different ways of crafting things. There's sort of a basic menu for crafting very basic stuff, you know, things that you need to just get started. Then you can start making, you know, crafting tables and a campfire that you can cook on and forge for ores that you might get, and all that kind of stuff to make fancier weapons and armor and all that kind of stuff. And then there's a blueprint screen, which is where you make all the, you know, the crafting tables and the bed and all the environmental stuff you're placing down.
Mm-hmm.
So you place those down in a spot, and then from there you put the materials onto it, and then from there you finish building it. And that's kind of the main things you're doing with all of that. There is co-op support to play with friends if you want. I'm just playing solo right now. But yeah, they have this new DLC. I guess it's their, must be their first big content pack, called Frostbite Fortress, which shows up as like a portal that I can make. And I can probably make it pretty soon, but I kind of want to put some more time into the main part of this to get used to how it's playing.
Mm-hmm.
Versus jumping into, you know, DLC that probably assumes that you've played a good bit of the game.
Yeah.
And understand what's going on. So yeah, once you kind of get the, you know, a bed built and a means of making food and all that, then you can start exploring the island. Here, and I assume it's procedurally generated so that if I started a new save, I would have a different looking island. But you start exploring and you find, you know, animals doing things, you know, birds and deer and boar and this kind of stuff that, you know, you eventually work your way towards killing them and you get their fur or meat or whatever out of them. A handful of days in, eventually it was like, oh, there's a raid coming, you need to prepare yourself. And one of the things you find pretty early on is a monkey trapped in like a cage, and you free it out and it follows you around, and it's kind of a neat like AI companion essentially that you can give them tools and have them do things for you. You can have, you know, them gather materials if you want, or you can give them the tool that's used for finishing crafting and all that, and show it what to do, and it'll do it and handle that. But since I had some enemies that were going to be coming in, I gave it a bat and taught it how to fight by fighting some birds first. It has to kind of see what you're doing to kind of get it. So I went and fought these dudes. I think I died once, but was able to kind of work my way back. You just drop all your items, and sort of in, you know, this kind of genre, you have a decent amount of storage space for that, but you can also build chests to put in your base area. Where I've been storing things, and I need to build some more of that because it's, I got too much random crap I don't have any use for yet. Well, yeah, I went and killed a bunch of these guys, got some neat stuff out of it. But nothing too complicated. It's like the worst, the most useful stuff was sort of like things that are on my crafting list, but just further down. Things like bow and arrows and spear and some other stuff that I hadn't gotten to yet. But the nice thing to do with the crafting stuff, which in this kind of genre, you generally have it kind of being like, oh, you make this thing that then allows you to make this thing that allows you to make this thing. Kind of keep going like that. But in the user interface for any of this crafting stuff, if you kind of have this grid, that's usually like a diamond-shaped grid, you'll see squares that are, or diamonds that are going to other parts of it. And so when you build that item, you craft it, it unlocks anything that is linked to it. And so from there, you kind of build out the ability to kind of fill out this whole thing and see what all is in there. And so, like, I've got, you know, different types of wood and stone things to make, because a lot of things are built with that. Maybe the one thing it doesn't do a great job of is highlighting things that you need. Like, if I'm trying to build, you know, a forge and I need certain things, it's doesn't seem like it makes it easy for me to get all of that stuff built easily, like batch making things. There could easily have been a tooltip that I missed, which I'll have to look. They do keep track of that stuff somewhere in the menus. But yeah, it's been kind of frustrating. Like, oh, I need four of these things, which then needs me to make a different thing to make that thing. And then you spend a lot of time just kind of building that stuff versus being like, well, I have enough to make all of this. Let me just make the ultimate thing I'm trying to make
mm-hmm.
out of it. That could be something I unlock at certain points. I just haven't seen all of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been enjoying this a lot. It's a nice little time waster. One of these. At some point, I'll make a raft that I can go around to other islands nearby or other parts of the island I'm on. That'll be nice to see. And yeah, apparently I'll have more monkeys at a certain point because they have a neat part of the screen where I found a like downed like FedEx plane.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a bunch of hats you can put on these monkeys. I assume to give you an easier idea to know like which ones are doing what things.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's like a bunch of ones that are like indicative of the sort of job you would give them for all that. But yeah, it's a pretty neat game. It's on sale all the time for like $3 or $4. So if you're looking for that kind of game, that's definitely a thing to check out. It was annoying when I got the code for this. It wasn't like a code for the game and the DLC. It was just the DLC. So I went and found it was either Fanatical or Green Man Gaming that was selling a code for $3. So I was like, all right, this will save me from having to spend like $20 on it instead.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's been a lot of fun, and I'll be doing a stream at some point. Going off the DLC part of it too. Maybe that'll be for this week coming up. We'll see. But yeah, I think that is pretty much what I've got to talk about.
Okay, so yeah, as for me, there is one game, a secret game, that I've been playing the last couple days. Unfortunately, I cannot talk about it just yet because the embargo does not lift until Tuesday morning. So all I will say is I'm greatly enjoying it, and I can't wait to be able to gush about it when the opportunity comes. In the meantime, however, on top of that, I have been playing a couple of other things. Obviously, I'm still playing Splatoon 3. We are in the middle of another Splatfest this time, and those are always both a lot of fun and also infuriating because it reminds me of how terrible I actually am at this game. Especially when it comes to the tricolor competitions, where these particular ones are arranged is kind of a little off. There's like three teams of different groups going at it, but the problem is of the teams, there's one team that's like the defending team, and that's made up of like four players. And then there's the attacking teams, which are both made up of teams of two. And whether or not you succeed really has to do on whether or not either are you a defending or are you an attacking. And I'll be completely frank, the defenders always kind of have an advantage simply because there's four of them. Whereas, the attacking team, there's only two of them at a time. And yeah, it can be infuriating. But again, it's another example of, the Splatoon 3 is just kind of unbalanced by nature. And you just kind of have to learn to embrace it. Still a hell of a lot of fun, though. And I look forward to Splat. This is like my second Splatfest that I've taken part in. And I loved the last one. This one is also a lot of fun. I'm also still playing Death Stranding 2. I've gotten pretty far into that one now. And like I've said before, Death Stranding 2, it still is not a game for everyone, but compared to the original Death Stranding, they definitely went back and, addressed a lot of the issues that the first Death Stranding had. Particularly, it's more action focused, there's more combat involved this time around, but still a great game, and, I can't wait to see just how weird this game fucking gets. I've already seen frickin' Troy Baker with a goddamn synth guitar, and that shit is crazy. But and other than that, probably the other major thing I played was the demo for Neverway. And Neverway is a game I've had my eye on when they first announced it last year. And it's essentially like, what if you took Stardew Valley and mixed it with Cthulhu? And that's basically what it is. You're playing a young woman by the name of Fiona, who is originally worked at like this tech job, but by the time the game opens, she's hip deep in a serious bout of clinical depression. She had basically just stopped going to work and was eventually terminated. She stopped talking to her girlfriend. She's just sort of isolated and stayed inside her apartment building for several days on end. And like there is a point where you actually go to like where her old job was, and they basically took all of your stuff and put it in a box and like just plopped it out in the middle of the lobby. But while that's happening, you can come back and you can like look at her computer and you'll see like all the old messages and stuff that kind of tell like the story of what's been going on here. And eventually she decides, you know what, this sucks. I need to just get a new start. So she decides to go to this island that's called Lagos. And you end up moving there. And then the game gets like particularly weird. The game was already pretty weird because on the train ride home from the office that her old job was from, she ends up like disassociating and starts hallucinating this weird nightmare region where, she's having to crawl through like a worm-like meat passage, and then there's like a chasm at the end where there's this weird giant eye with insect parts, and it's weird stuff. But the thing is, after she moves into her new house in Lagos, then her computer starts up, and that's where you go into the simulation portion, which is essentially a, it's basically sort of teaching you the, it's the tutorial, essentially, where you're in this like virtual space, learning you like how attacking works, how you construct stuff, how you harvest things, stuff like that, how all that stuff works. And then about midway through it, the simulation starts breaking down and a bunch of weird demon shit starts showing up and flashing all over the place. And then you leave the simulation and that's the end of the demo. And holy shit, I gotta tell you, I'm getting this game the moment it comes out 'cause it looks amazing and I desperately want to play it. That demo alone was a lot of fun, and I gotta play more of it desperately. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And first up, we've got some sad news as the creator of Double Dragon and the Kunio Kun series, Yoshihisa Kishimoto, has passed away at the age of 64. He is essentially a forefather of the beat 'em up genre.
Yeah, basically, if you like Streets of Rage, if you like Final Fight, he's the guy who essentially started the whole formula.
With two of the biggest franchises in the 80s for that. The Kunio Kun series in the US was River City Ransom. We didn't get a ton of the other games over here until, more collections and all that kind of came out. But River City Ransom was a hugely influential game. And Double Dragon obviously has a lot of great stuff about it, especially even just being very quick and successful with a story to it. You are, these two guys hanging out with their girl. She gets beat up and kidnapped. Like, all right, we gotta go beat up guys to get her back. That kind of thing. And yeah, kind of set the tone for the way that a lot of beat 'em ups later on in the NES and Super Nintendo and arcade and all that, you know, behaved as a result.
Yep.
With that. So yeah, you would definitely put him up there on the Mount Rushmore of beat 'em up creators.
Yep. Definitely. Especially the Kunio Kun's franchise, that whole thing spun off into a bunch of wild directions.
yeah.
Because most people remember River City Ransom. A lot of people forget about the series of dodgeball games that that series ended up inspiring.
Yeah, kind of branched out into a lot of things.
Yeah. And of course, now, you know, the series sort of got a new life of its own because of, you know, the recent indie games that sort of bridged the two franchises together and sort of redid some of them.
Yeah, like things like River City Girls.
Yeah.
Revitalized the brand.
Yep.
In a pretty good way.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's been a big deal, and Double Dragon's also been getting that as a result of a bunch of indie devs with their, like, roguelike game. Some of that other stuff. Arc System Works was working on one of those.
Mm-hmm.
A more 3D, 2D, 3D kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, kind of one of those that I don't know if that came out at all. Yeah, Double Dragon also had plenty of stinkers. I felt like the first game was kind of a great start and then didn't really know how to evolve things a bit.
Yeah.
Two's fine, and then there's three and four.
Two was fine, but it was also like another good example of like, yeah, we're good. You know, it starts off good, and then it just gets crazy towards the end.
Yeah. So yeah, you end up with that kind of stuff. But yeah, like three and four, I believe, are the ones that are kind of really not well liked. Especially, I forget which one of them was coming out on XBLA, and it's like people are like, yeah, this is one of the worst games. There's no reason they should have brought this back.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's here and there. 64, very young to be passing away, unfortunately. I don't know if we really know what happened, but his son was the one that posted this. So yeah, that's unfortunate. But he's had a great career and left a lot of good work out there for people to check out.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, definitely someone whose work you should look into if you have not seen any of those games before. Because, yeah, there's a lot of great stuff there. So, yeah, unless you have anything else to add, Brandon?
Not really, other than the fact that, you know, I grew up playing a lot of this dude's work, and, you know, it's you know, this is going to start happening more frequently in the coming years. A lot of these older creators are getting, developers are getting on in years.
Yeah.
And, you know, so treasure them while they're still here.
Yeah, and hopefully they are willing to talk about their story. We know from history that a lot of Japanese devs do not like to talk about their work, their opinions on things, whether it's going well or not, and all that. Then try to just bottle that stuff up for the good of the company, I guess, which is not great. It keeps a lot of history, unfortunately. But, yeah. Well, there you go with that. Let's get to the next thing here. We got another No Man's Sky update. This time being called Xeno Arena. Mm-hmm. Essentially introducing turn-based creature battles.
Yep.
Which they put out on the same day that Pokemon Champions came out. Which had a bit of a rough launch for a Pokemon game. So it seemed like, oh, we're able to do this thing and do it pretty well. But yeah, they let's see, yeah, you gather these, you collect these as you explore the worlds you are on, I guess. You fight them on these like little stage arenas,
mm-hmm.
essentially, that look pretty neat for what they are. So yeah, I'm curious to see this for myself. I've not had a chance to check it out, but just another ridiculous thing for them to be adding to this game.
Yeah.
What, we need a Pokemon now?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it looks like you get experience for them, and they unlock genetic mutations, all that kind of stuff, bumping up their stats and whatnot. You play against other players, which is neat. Yeah, there's a new traveler in the space anomaly for this. So, yeah, there's a lot of that stuff going on there. New things to unlock and all that, so that seems pretty cool. But yeah, there you go. Your big new reason to jump back into No Man's Sky.
Yep.
Let's see. Also, talking about updates, Cave Story got a big update for mm-hmm. the PC version. It essentially puts it in line with all the console versions that have come out. Adds like all the features that those various versions have had. They mention here like two-player mode, Fami tracks and Ridiculon soundtracks, sandpit challenge, a jukebox, widescreen support, animated and flipped dialogue portraits, you know, new lighting system, physical water backgrounds, map shading, strafing, a bunch of difficulty twerks, and all this, as well as adding in modding support.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, people can do all their mod stuff in with this official version that is fully supported now with all that. So that seems like that should be pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty neat for, yeah, another game that is sort of a foundational indie game.
Oh, yeah. I'd say it's the foundational indie game. Because, like, you know, a lot of the games like, you know, Threads or, Undertale and, you know, all those, like, really popular independent-made games that really took off, they really took off because Cave Story showed that it could be done. And, you know, part of what made Cave Story so popular is that it was basically a shareware game for, like, the longest time before the publishers got a hold of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, this is pretty neat. I jump back into this, though. I feel like Cave Story is a game that I play for a few hours and then kind of lose track of what I'm supposed to be doing and just move mm-hmm. on. Pretty easy to kind of get lost in that.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll find a guy that'll help me figure out what I'm supposed to be going. But yeah, there you go for that. Just for the PC version. It's a shame they haven't put that out on more platforms. Like, it's only on Switch at this mm-hmm. point, which I assume is because the creator reveres Nintendo games.
Yeah.
Only wants it on there. But yeah, there you go. Speaking of Nintendo games, we got three new NES games being added to Nintendo Switch Online. And this is a pretty weird trio here. So the big one here is Pac-Man.
Mm-hmm.
The classic NES Pac-Man, which is a pretty good version of that.
Yep.
Also a game that you probably have at least three or four other ways of playing on Switch.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure there's at least a Arcade Archives version of some version of Pac-Man on there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's not, but there's also at least a Pac-Man collection on there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably at least two of those at this point. Mm-hmm. Play the arcade originals.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a solid version of that game to play.
Yeah.
Especially when probably the most recent version people knew was the Atari version.
Mm-hmm.
It's just dreadful. What if we put Pac-Man in a different screen ratio and kind of distort it?
Yeah.
Make it sound and not look good.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. The other game we have here, I don't know if this was even released in the U.S., Mendel Palace.
Mm-hmm.
This might be the first Game Freak game.
It is the first Game Freak game. Very first one.
Polish, published by Namco in Japan and in North America by Hudson. So yeah, it's the debut game of Satoshi Tajiri, which I guess went on to inspire him to make Pokemon.
Well, yeah, basically. Although Game Freak did a bunch of other games before that.
Yeah. But yeah, this seems like a pretty interesting little game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so is this just a beat-em-up?
Yeah.
So yeah, that looks neat.
And we did actually get it over here.
Yeah.
It's
probably
just
not a ton of copies of it, but...
No.
Yeah.
It was originally it was released by Hudson Soft, so...
So yeah. Very weird box art.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one here is a Japanese exclusive, or at least it never released over here, really, in this form, at least the Tower of Juraga.
Yep.
Which is definitely a game that influenced a lot of other games.
Oh, yeah.
At least the arcade version.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like people cite this game as, like, an inspiration for, like, Zelda, and a lot of stuff like that. So yeah, that's a game that has influenced a lot of others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the wiki page has a bunch of stuff here about its legacy. I don't think we've gotten too many games out of this franchise. I want to say there's been a couple, but not quite as much as it maybe should have been.
Mm-hmm.
With the way that's, you know, this influenced a lot of other games. Yeah, they mentioned here Ys, Hydaelyde, Dragon Slayer, and Legend of Zelda as being some of its biggest influences.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Got a bunch of ports to other platforms and all that. So yeah, that's a pretty cool game that you can check out now.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, that's your trio of games and a pretty interesting batch here.
Oh, yeah. Kind of esoteric, honestly.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's your new NES games on the mm-hmm. Nintendo Switch Online. And, yeah, let's get to some games that have been getting some dates. First up here, Death by Scrolling is coming to PS5, Xbox, and Switch mm-hmm. on April 16th. This is the newest Ron Gilbert game. That is essentially like a vertically scrolling RPG roguelike kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is, seems like it's pretty good from what I've heard of the PC release, so
mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. They finally get it on consoles.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it'll be $8, so not too much for what they're offering here, so
yeah,
might be one to check out. So yeah, there you go for that. Some new Ron Gilbert game.
Mm-hmm.
Always fun to see. We got this one, the Genesis RPG Trasia is coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC on April 24th.
Yep.
Courtesy of Radaleka Games.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Telnet, Japan-developed Genesis RPG that, from everything I've read, it's okay.
It's yeah.
Not a very good game, but... at least interesting to get an opportunity to play this on a modern console mm-hmm. because it could have easily just been thrown to the wayside and never seen again, and nobody mm-hmm. really missing all that much on it. But yeah, like looking at the wiki page, it has a lot of let's see what Famitsu gave it a 13 out of 40.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave any solid game good scores.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of others here is like 51%, 39%, 17%, 5.2 out of 10. So yeah, kind of an okay game at best. Which yeah, but yeah, you could spend like $6 or $8 for this thing and have a chance to play something. That's an interesting part of history.
Mm-hmm.
So, nothing really to keep about it. If you're interested in seeing like what some old RPGs outside of the main ones you always see coming back up again. Your Phantasy Stars, Shining in the Darkness, that you'd see on the Genesis getting mentioned over and over again.
Oh yeah.
Just want to check out and be like, man, those other games are real good. That this one doesn't, you know, hold a candle to them. But yeah, you can check that one out. So that'll be out on the 24th, so about 2 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out in May 12th, Call of the Elder Gods.
This yeah.
is the sequel to
Call of the
Call
Sea.
Of the Sea. And yeah, kind of where that one kind of dips into the Cthulhu stuff towards the latter part of that game. This one is fully in that.
Yep.
Yeah, it takes place 30 years after the original and stars two characters who work together to unravel a new cosmic mystery. So yeah, that looks like that's going to be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, not too far away, a month away.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can check that one out in a little bit. And the last one we have here, Rhythm Heaven Groove. Got a random announcement on their news app that it was coming out on July 2nd. This will be a $40 game.
Mm-hmm.
So a pretty good price for what you're getting here. And yeah, it's, you know, a Rhythm Heaven game. So it's a very kind of cool rhythm minigame collection kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're going through a lot of these little scenarios built on, you know, rhythm that you need to match up to succeed. And
mm-hmm.
you know, you try to get perfect or whatever it calls the top tier score. And you work towards unlocking more content in the game and all that. And yeah, one of those side series of Nintendo's that they don't dip into very often. But when they mm-hmm. do, it's always a really cool thing to get into.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that'll just be on the Switch, and you'll play it on the Switch 2 with backwards compatibility for that. So that'll be a nice summer game.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly here, 007 First Light was supposed to be out May 27th for the Switch 2, alongside the PS5, Xbox, and PC versions, but they've said that they have had to delay it to later this summer.
Yeah, that's not a surprise.
Yeah, citing that they just had more work to do on it,
mm-hmm.
on that, but not really saying too much else. I'm going to bet just tech reasons, it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, they're still trying to find a way to shove all of that into a Switch cartridge, so.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a shame, but I was planning on PS5 anyway, so
mm-hmm.
I'm still all in on that game. But yeah, that'll be a little bit of a wait for that. And let's see, we also have one other thing got announced. Level 5 had another one of their showcases.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the main notable bit of news I saw is that Professor Layton and the New World of Steam is coming to PS5 and PC alongside the Switch and Switch 2 versions, and will be out later this year. Which will be the first game in the series not on a
Nintendo console. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And it's been a long time since I've played a Professor Layton game, so.
Yeah. They were generally published by Nintendo, and
mm-hmm.
I guess Nintendo doesn't want to deal with it
mm-hmm.
this time around, so they are putting it on more platforms as a result. So yeah, I just hope this one doesn't have any AI shit in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've been doing with like Inazuma 11, they were showing off a lot of that work they were doing there, so
yep.
We'll see. But yeah, there you go for that. That's your date stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anything there you're interested in, Brandon?
Well, I said Professor Layton, obviously that's a big one. Let's see, Death by Scrolling definitely looks interesting. As far as like 007 First Light though, that one's I'm not gonna be doing that one on a Switch. that's gonna be a PS5 for me. And other stuff looks all right. Call of the Elder Gods I'll probably give a look when it comes out in May. But that's about it.
Yeah.
And now for something that's both bad and hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like in the past couple of days, Rockstar Games has been hacked again.
Yep.
It seems like it is by a group called Shiny Hunters that have breached some of their cloud servers. Which they've been claiming is not a big deal. Rockstar is.
Yeah.
They put out a statement saying, "We can confirm that a limited amount of non-material company information was accessed in connection with a third-party data breach. This incident has no impact on our organization or our players." Which, yeah. The group here claims that, yeah, that this would have things like analytics data, and potentially like contracts for publishing, platform contracts, a lot of that kind of stuff. And they're demanding a ransom for this, and saying to reach out by April 14th before we leak, along with several annoying digital problems that'll come your way. Make the right decision. Don't be the next headline. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yep.
I'm going to guess they're not going to bother with it, but yeah.
Probably not in a way that's like, I mean, the stuff that these guys managed to get, apparently, you know, if we're to believe what Rockstar said, it's not really, it's pretty small potatoes. So at most, they're probably just going to, you know, sick the law on them and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah. So, yeah. That'd be interesting to see how this ends up. But yeah, based on what they show here, yeah, like corporate information and assets could be contracts, financial documents, marketing plans, and other data.
Yeah.
So no, like, passwords or accounts data or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or
nothing like data. That. Yeah, which is what happened last time.
Yeah.
When they leaked all of that sort of alpha footage of what GTA 6 was going to be looking like. And of course, people all freaked out because so many of them have no idea how game development actually works.
Yeah.
Yeah, like this is just basic assets. They're probably not even close on, they probably hadn't even started the art stuff yet by the time that shit came out.
Yeah. So yeah, there's your GTA 6 news of the week. Let's get back to Nintendo.
Yeah.
Because there's been some weird stuff going on with Super Mario Maker 2.
Yeah.
Which is that a ton of stages are getting deleted and removed over the thing that people are getting emails about, claiming that it contains advertising content. Yeah, it seems like the number is closer to 1,000. Here at least, yeah, it seems to deal with potentially a group of level makers that works out of a Discord. I guess it's called Team Shell, so they sometimes will put hashtag TS or hashtag Team Shell in the title of their stages, make it a bit easier to find them.
Yeah,
because you know, Super Mario Maker and Mario Maker 2. Not well known for ease of access.
No.
People's stages.
Yeah, seriously.
People found ways of gaming that a little bit. And you're like, all right, that's weird. That's not advertising, but that's unfortunate. But people dug into this and seem like they have found the person that is responsible for this.
Yeah.
And they're a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, one user decided to take credit for reporting these levels. Someone by the name of LMT. Turns out the YouTube account linked to LMT's Discord profile bears the pseudonym of someone called MT94.
Yeah.
Who was at one point the second highest rated Super Mario Maker player in the world. And then turns out that they cheated their way to that ranking.
Yep.
And they achieved this by using three separate Nintendo Switch consoles. By consistently challenging their own counts to co-op battles in the game, they managed to boost themselves up the rankings. After the community found out and reported them, their accounts were banned.
Yep.
And so likely seems like they are maybe using these multiple switches to mass report these people.
Yeah.
These stages. And yeah, that is and it seems like users are also reporting that their Nintendo Switch accounts are being suspended as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which may be part of an automatic system in place that suspends an account if it's been associated with a certain number of reports. So you may be getting, you know, people's accounts shut down as well.
Mm-hmm.
For that. But yeah, there's a wild story here, and it's pretty ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one person can kind of cause as much chaos, and Nintendo doesn't seem too interested in really sorting out what the problem is.
Nintendo has always been kind of crap when it comes to the internet in general, so.
Yeah.
Also, like, that game, I'm pretty, you know, that was an OG Switch title, so. But I would not be surprised if it's also sort of a signal that they're, this might be sort of a semi-signal that they're also making Super Mario Maker 3. Because if they're like, yeah, we don't really give a shit about this game anymore.
Yeah, but then they wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like if they didn't give a shit, they wouldn't bother with any of this at all.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's their typical MO. That's why they haven't added any content to this game.
Pretty much.
In years.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, there you go. There's your annoying Nintendo news of the week.
Yep.
Now let's get to some annoying Xbox news of the week. A former Halo Studios art director, among other employees as well, are accusing the studio of harassment and retaliation.
Yeah.
Former art director Glenn Israel, longtime veteran of the franchise, was posting on LinkedIn in a two-part post, accused Microsoft of covering up allegations of unethical and or unlawful acts committed by senior Halo Studios representatives.
Mm-hmm.
That included blacklisting, fraud, and harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And saying this took place from January 2024 to June 2025. Mm. About 18 months there. He claimed even though he filed formal complaints with Microsoft's Human Resources Division in June 2025, the company made no meaningful investigation. This allegedly led to several senior staff representatives executing a four-day-long act of harassment intended to manufacture cause for Israel's termination. He says the catastrophic mismanagement of development at Halo campaign involved led to his art team being reassigned from the unannounced game he had been working on in August 2025, and his role declared redundant as a result. Yeah, he seems to confirm this redundancy was the cause of his October departure.
Mm.
Said that he only signed his severance agreement after it apparently became clear that the ongoing HR investigation into his complaints were a sham. Mm. Which this bit of thing getting out there prompted other former employees to publicly make similar accusations. One former producer claimed they'd spoken with some in-studio leadership who, quote, wanted to fire every single artist.
Mm.
Others said they were, quote, bullied out of their job by leadership for, quote, telling the truth about what was going on. One former business executive partner said Halo equals harassment and retaliation. I witnessed it, and it happened to me, too.
Mm.
He also said he has no reason to doubt the other people's claims. I witnessed similar experiences within the studio art department often. These instances were my impetus to begin formally gathering evidence.
Yeah.
Xbox spokesperson. Provided a statement that said they did not comment on individual employee issues.
Mm-hmm.
We do take all claims seriously for both current and former employees. It seems like this has been an issue for at least a few years.
Mm-hmm.
There were some from 2023 when there were the big company-wide layoff at Microsoft that affected a ton of Xbox people. That's a sad thing to see.
Yeah.
Not too surprising from the way that that studio particularly seems to rely on contractors and all that. Basically not having anybody there very long. They can help it. So to say that the people that were there for a long time suffered a lot of unfortunate treatment.
From
senior leadership does not seem like a huge surprise.
Yeah.
Or it seems like something that Microsoft still won't do much about. So yeah, there you go there. But yeah, that's it for our news. But we do have the IIIA Initiative Showcase here, and we're not going to go through everything because there's a bunch of stuff here that is just things that, you know, got new trailers or have new updates or DLC.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But we'll go through some of this, the more interesting things here that were shown off. The first one here is Prove You're Human.
Yep.
This was the game that the team behind 1000X Resist, Sunset Visitor, was teasing. Which has a sci-fi narrative adventure game that puts the player in the role of a digital copy of a person convinced it is human. So far just on PC, but no date or anything for that. Yeah, has a kind of like robotic. Let's say if GLaDOS had a human face.
Yeah, basically. Instead of like
camera looking thing. As well as a lot of the interface you get is similar to the Google verification thing of like, you know, click the images with a motorcycle in it. Kind of thing. They do a lot of that in this, and yeah, it has a really striking look to it. I don't know necessarily what the hell this game is going to look like, play, but it looks really interesting so far.
For real. Definitely.
Yeah. That was a neat one to see. Let's see, what else do we have here? Yeah, we got Thick as Thieves. It's coming out May 20th. This was shown at one of the Xbox showcases.
Yeah.
It's the new game from Warren Spector's studio, which was supposed to be a PvPvE game, but they announced like shortly before this showcase that they were just doing a straight, you know, single-player campaign with co-op mode in it. So that looks like it's going to be a more interesting game then. You can just kind of play like, you know, some of the ones that Warren Spector has made before. So that's neat. Yeah, we got, let's see here. Yeah, Crop. That was one that looked pretty neat. This is sort of a new game published by 11-Bit Studios. That is sort of a farming game, but with some other shit going on there.
Oh, yeah.
they call it a gritty farming thriller where your safety depends on the yield. Bound to a dying farm, you must dig, plant, irrigate, and cut your way through the decay. Cover buried secrets, both in the soil and quietly brewing within the village.
Yep.
The way out is through the harvest. And yeah, it has an interesting look to it.
Oh, yeah. And it's got a very, it's very gritty.
Yeah.
Is how I would say. It has a very sort of gritty look to it.
Yeah. So yeah, there's Over the Hill. It looks neat. This is I want to say, yeah, this is from the studio that has made a bunch of these kind of casual racing games, I think it is. And this one's kind of, what if you had yeah, like an off-road exploration game where you're just a bunch of like Jeep style vehicles driving through this big open environment, finding things to do and all that kind of stuff. That looks pretty neat. So yeah, that's out later this year on PC, and then we'll hit consoles at a later time. But that has a play test, I think, here on the 24th through the 26th. Yeah, we got Star Seeker Astroneer Expeditions. This is the new game from the Astroneer people. It's kind of more of a co-op style of game. And yeah, they have a big playtest or open beta test that'll be happening later this month. So
right.
Keep an eye out for that. Yeah, there's this weird shift at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, what if we made one of those, you know, gas station management sims?
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of running the gas station and managing the inventory and all that, and scanning people out. But we took that and merged it with a weird horror game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what this is. We got just weird shit going on around the sort of the sides of, you know, the area around you.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. You're like trying to figure out who are the humans and not serve them. Mm-hmm. I guess a little bit of like Exit 8, where you're trying to figure out these people and avoid them.
Yeah.
But if you end up doing that, you potentially create an opportunity for like these creatures to infiltrate your store and cause a bunch of chaos and probably kill you.
Yep.
So yeah, got a bunch of weird shit going on there, but yeah, there's that. This is one I was looking forward to. Solar Punk finally has a date of June 8th.
Yep.
This is kind of one of those survival games.
Yep.
But set on big sky islands.
Yeah.
Which is a nice change of scenery.
Mm-hmm.
Has a really nice look to it and all that. Yeah, I played the demo for that, and that just looks pretty cool. So
yeah.
That'll be on everything. Then we got Warhammer Survivors.
Mm-hmm.
It's been talked about, but yeah, they've made a Vampire Survivors style game, but it's set in the Warhammer's universe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is published by Funkle. So that is pretty cool. And yeah, it looks pretty much exactly the same art style as Vampire Survivors, just orcs and tanks and all that kind of stuff going on there. So yeah, that's pretty fun. Let's see what else we got here. There's a Way Team, Oxygen Not Included.
Mm-hmm.
It's a play game. They made, you know, Oxygen Not Included, which is sort of a side-scrolling base simulation kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And they've made a new game in that. So I think this one's maybe more focused on co-op.
Mm-hmm.
But this playtest they're doing is a single player. So that's cool. That's one I think has done surprisingly well, so there's that. Let's see. Yeah, there's a new Temtem game called mm-hmm. Temtem Pioneers. Basically, what if we did Cow World but no guns?
Yeah.
Basically, you know, you have this open world survival crafting game.
Yep.
But you can hang out with your Temtem and, you know, fight battles with other people or just find new ones to collect and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Have them help you take down, you know, trees and all that. So that looks like that could be a pretty fun time.
Mm-hmm.
That is on Kickstarter. I think they've already passed their goal.
Yeah.
So now they're working on stretch goals. Yeah, they just got the one for New Biome.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're working on one that's going to add new fossil Tems to the game. So that looks neat. No release date for that yet. Let's see. There's Graveyard Keeper 2 that got announced. Mm-hmm. They made Graveyard Keeper 1 free on everything, I think.
Yep.
There's a catch to this one. Because yeah. The developer people looked at their Twitter accounts. And he is just basically posting and, you know, following a ton of AI slop accounts.
Mm-hmm.
To which he has said he's not using AI for the game, which is like hard to believe when he's
yeah
so much and talking so positively about the all of this AI shit.
Yeah.
Especially having the dev accounts
mm-hmm.
retweeting a bunch of this stuff.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's a real good way of not convincing anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here I'm looking at this, and yeah, he used some AI tool to take the art that he made for the first game's logo
mm-hmm.
on like that donkey, different art styles, and one's the Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Or it doesn't even have pupils in the eyes for the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, do you think this looked good? Other people that are responding to his things. And I mean, if you look at his accounts and you'll see that he's retweeted Grums.
Of course.
Not for the culture war stuff
mm-hmm.
directly, because it was released with AI use.
Yeah.
I think it was, what was the PS1 game with the women? It was sort of the sci-fi game where the whole hook was that you were playing as a sexy woman.
Let me think here.
Yeah. Basically, Grums posted a picture like, oh, this is what, you know, a remade version of this could be. Okay, Fear Effect.
Oh, Fear Effect, yeah. Okay, yeah, like, that's the one.
Here's an upgraded version of the, like, a screenshot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a screenshot that's done in, like, such an unflattering way. Make that game look ugly.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he retweets it and says, that's the inevitable future of gaming. So, yeah, then...
Jack, I guess.
Also retweets Yorch Torch Games.
Who's another
Gamergate 2.0 feature participant who's incredibly stupid.
Ugh.
And yeah, same thing, like AI posts that they have and sort of follow them. Yeah, this is one about some award show stripping their Game of the Year award they gave to Claire Obscure after finding out it was using AI.
Yeah.
And who, when he retweets this and says, wow, AI haters are now running the awards. Like, no, they gave it an award under different pretenses.
Yeah.
Finding out that it wasn't the thing that they were rewarding it for, said, no, we're not going to give it to you in the end. Like, follows those two, and there's, like, another account that posts a lot of right-wing shit, but also a bunch of AI shit, so, like, I'd say follows some very sketchy people, but I would say it's under the scope of somebody that is, you know, knee-deep in AI bullshit. So I can't imagine what their feed looks like.
Mm.
Gotta be the most annoying feed possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, one that's just post fake movie posters.
Yeah.
For things, and it always puts the year on it and all that. Just comes up with some poster and he like responds to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sort of like, what the fuck is the point of anything you're doing here?
Yeah.
So yeah. This Graveyard Keeper 2 game has kind of come out to be like, oh, people are excited for it, and then they found out what this guy's co-founder of the studio is all about and been like, oh, maybe I don't want this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of where we're at on some of this stuff. Let's see, what else we got here? Yeah, there's Alabaster Dawn. This is an action RPG from the studio that made CrossCode. Their new thing. It'll be coming out in early access on PC on May 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And probably consoles at some point once it's out of early access. So yeah, and yeah, kind of a couple thing, few things here. There's a game called Too Deep to Quit, which looks like if you had, as the Guilty as Sock developer, making this kind of, what if we had Indiana Jones, but Muppets?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a co-op adventure game kind of thing. It's coming to PC later this year. That looks pretty neat. Neverway was featured here near the end. Basically, there's a demo now on PC, and it'll be out this October. No specific date on that, but yeah. Almost going to be out in a little bit. And then, yeah, this game called Final Sentence is out now. I don't know if you've seen this. It is a typing game?
Yep, it's a typing battle royale, basically.
Essentially, you're in this weird room with a bunch of guys with guns, holding those guns to the head of people typing out these weird sentences and such, and you have to type perfectly to hopefully win. But every mistake you make, you get shot, and there's an increasing chance that, you know, it's almost sort of like a Russian roulette kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where they may have a blank or something they're shooting you with. And
yeah.
Yeah, trying to survive. It also has proximity voice chat to it, so you can yell things at other people or say nice things or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Probably sounds pretty good when you're about to get shot. You just yell out before you're killed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this seems like a really, really fun take on a battle royale game.
Yep.
In a really tense environment, depending on
how you are
at typing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was a game that had a demo for one of the previous demo fests that was pretty popular. Yeah, it seems like it's doing pretty well. It's $10. And you get it in bundles with other games. Yeah, with Clover Pit or Buckshot Roulette. So yeah, there's some ways of getting it a little cheaper than $10. So there's that. And yeah, then they ended it on there being a new Don't Starve game.
Yep.
So along with making a new Oxygen Not Included game, Play is also making a new Don't Starve called Don't Starve Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, new game on PC, no date for it yet. So yeah, it looks like they're going to maybe more fantastical universe.
Yeah.
It looks like. But yeah, I see a lot of these are the same characters. Or some of the same characters from the original game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that game was huge. You may not realize it, but yeah, that's mm-hmm. a game that did incredibly well. They sold a lot of merch. You can get plush dolls of the various characters and all that. And yeah, it's a game that kind of let Clay kind of make whatever they wanted for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they made the Don't Starve Together, their co-op thing. They did like a Hamlet version of Don't Starve, I think. That's like mm-hmm. a DLC thing. But yeah, the game did really well. I'm not huge surprised that there's going to be more of that.
So mm-hmm.
That looks cool. And yeah, that's your showcase here.
Mm-hmm.
Still plenty more here if you want to take a look at the list, but I just highlighted some of the most interesting things. They did announce a lot of things here that are coming out in the next month or two.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of games, especially a lot going in early access.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of early access here where that hopefully works out for them, but yeah, you can check those out. And yeah, anything here you're really interested in, Brandon?
Well, Neverway is probably the obvious one, but you know, I already talked about that one earlier when I was talking about the demo. Let's see. Dead as Disco looks interesting. We didn't talk about that one, but Solarpunk also looks cool. That looks like something to be very entertaining. Alabaster Dawn also looks good. Final Sentence definitely looks like something I would want to play, and it's already out, so you know, you can get it whenever you're ready. And Prove You're Human is definitely like something that I'd be into. That type of high concept sci-fi narrative is something I'd be into playing. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, so yeah, there you go for some pretty neat indie stuff to keep an eye on for the near mm-hmm. future. But yeah, I think it's gonna do it for the show. Yeah, if you enjoy the show, for free. Keep an eye out on the podcast. Let friends and family know they should check it out and select strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out, because, yeah, there's always cool games coming out. But, yeah, thank you to Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about as the weather continues to get warmer.
Yes, it is going to get progressively warmer.
I'm not going to say better, because I'm not that kind of person that assumes higher temps equals better.
Especially not where I live.
Yeah. We're going to hit near 80 a bunch this week.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be fun. Near 80 with some rain in there, so hot and humid.
Mm-hmm.
best combo. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.